Hello.
Episode 488. How's Sarah?
Feeling great.
Really?
Well, just
for
488.
Fuck's sake. I fell right into your sick trap.
You did. My sick trap. I'm feeling all right.
Mediokes.
Mediokes.
That's really fine.
That's what we're looking for, right?
Yeah.
Just like better than yesterday. Optimistic about tomorrow.
I meant to tell you recently that Peg, my mom.
Yes.
People keep texting me and commenting and saying, like, how's Peg doing because Trump lost, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, so she was with me the other day and I got a text from my friend Kelly and she's like, how's Peggily? Because she calls her Peggily. Yeah. And I was like, well, let me ask her, Peg, how you doing with this Biden situation? And she's like, oh, I'm fine because Trump's got a plan and he will be president any minute now. Like it's over and she still thinks, which is probably very comforting for her.
Right. And I'm like, fine, let him think that.
Sure.
Like, sure, go ahead.
Because she had originally...
And we'll be busy getting, you know, things approved and bills passed and stuff done. And
whenever she had told me all the reliable prophets told her that he, you know, Trump would win, then she said, so if he doesn't win, I'm going to have to know that these are false prophets. And I'm like, okay. So then I said, so the prophets, are we still... Well, where are we with that?
Checking in. How those profits?
She's like, well, they have a few. Basically, it's like a few weeks in her mind where this could all get turned around because she still believes that Trump won in a landslide and that there was all this fraud and stuff. And I'm like, it's weird how the whole Supreme Court didn't agree with that.
Even the people Trump appointed.
Right. She goes, well, I will say that was very shocking.
I will say, I mean, this is the same thing. I got a call from my mom the other day and multiple text messages that were like, I can't, I need to talk to you. I'm fuming. And I'm like, what is going on? She struck up a conversation like she does with these like millennials in Costa Rica that were, you know, down there on vacation. Mm-hmm. She said, all of them are college educated. All of them believed that the earth is flat.
Oh no.
And she was Sarah,
she was like,
what is this?
She was having like a meltdown. Hang out with each other too.
Well, of course, because anybody else would be like,
but it stuck with me what you said about the flat earther documentary, how it is. And I believe this is also true of QAnon and other such conspiracy theories. It does make them feel like they belong somewhere.
Yes. Yes.
They have a community.
It. Yeah.
So whatevs.
Yeah.
Okay.
How's that shaman guy in his all organic diet? He's still getting that there.
Oh, that guy. Right. Okay. So before I sort of dive into all of the things I want you to all learn with me, I want to know your opinion about Elizabeth Smart being on The Masked Singer, the former kidnapping victim, Elizabeth Smart.
Yes.
You're like, I don't care.
I mean, I it's interesting. Just, I'm a kind of okay with it. I'm like, I'm more than okay with it in a way because I feel like even though... You know, there are so many crimes like that where we've glorified. I think about all the documentaries I've watched about serial killers and the Night Stalker and this, that, and the other. And they're all centered around the killer as the main character. And it's like giving them all the attention. I'm okay. And I like that the person who's the victim is like, no, look at my life and look at how I'm thriving and let's talk about me and what's going on. Like, who cares about that guy? Look at what I'm dancing with the stars. I'm like,
yeah,
good. That's a thriver.
I like that perspective.
Yeah. Are people not about it? What are they saying?
Well, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, that's strange, but I always really liked her and think she's sweet and everything. So I was just happy to see she's doing well.
Yes.
And but then I saw a lot of tweets where people were like, this is the dumbest timeline and we've reached peak like nonsense and all this stuff. And I thought, wonder what it is that bothers them about it.
Right. I think that's a good question to ask. And who's like, Because what is it about it that bothers you? Do you not like that somebody who is a victim of a crime rose to celebrity status? Because, you know, I think about, you know, and it's kind of apples to oranges, but like Monica Lewinsky, you know, there's.
I think maybe what they're referring to is how this 24-hour news cycle makes celebrities out of unwitting people and and the perpetrators. And it's sort of a weird thing. And then by putting her on a reality show, you're really kind of solidifying that if you're a victim of a crime, you might become a celebrity too. And that's odd.
I watched, and I can't remember if it was an episode of Law and Order, like a movie or something like that, that talked about, it was, there was a scene where it was the perspective of a wife whose husband was the victim of a murder and what happened at, and how she like lost everything and just that became the story of their life. And I'm sure it was a movie and it, it really only gets told in one direction. You only hear the story where it's like sad stuff. You know, I this is somebody who, you know, and so often those stories about, you know, a crime or about something that happened are written by, you know, there's like those, all those true crime writers and things like that. She wrote a book, right?
Yes, she did.
Yeah. So she chose to tell her story and chose to put herself in the position of a survivor and sharing her experience. And so I think she is not famous because of what happened to her. She's famous because of how she reacted and what she did as a response to what happened to her and how she kind of took charge and took hold, made that story hers instead of something where she was just a character in it.
My hope, though, is if we're going to do this, if we're going to sort of have this be a thing where victims of crime become pseudo celebrities, it would be nice if we didn't just include white blonde women.
This is true. Absolutely. 100% true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cause that's part of why she's like seen
God,
as
that makes my stomach hurt for a sec.
The was the ultimate victim because she was this little blonde girl in a Mormon family in Utah. It's like the last person you'd think would be stolen from her bedroom. So people
you
are
know,
less
Chet
shocked
from my episode, my season of the Real World or my Real World. His brother dated her.
Right. I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
Well, makes sense, but it's still weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It was when he told me that I was like, and I think it was before she had really started talking about it and
as
everything.
An adult,
it was kind of like hush hush. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy she's doing well. And I just wanted you to weigh in and I liked your point of view. So glad we settled
you
that.
Know, I'm trying to, or at least heard Sarah's ideas.
I love it. I just think it's up for debate and someone could make, if someone synthesized why they found it offensive and then I saw it from a new point of view, I could be convinced. I just didn't know what the point of view was that people were so offended by.
Like if we have Carol Baskins on there, I feel like we can have this woman on there.
Yeah. I'd much rather have Elizabeth Smart.
Right. It feels like, although I mean the outfits alone for the.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay. Yeah. Any hoodles. Like you, last episode you said you saw a movie that was amazing, and I thought you were going to talk about the one I'm going to talk about, which was a documentary on, I think it's Amazon Prime, called Some Kind of Heaven. And it is about this place in Florida called The Villages, which is the largest retirement community in the world.
Uh-huh.
It has 130,000 residents.
Whoa.
So it's like a small city. Yeah. It's a proper town. And the way that the film is shot, it looks like an actual scripted movie. Like it's on sticks and it's just very artistic and colorful. Mm. You know, like think of a pink flamingo or Palm yes. Springs or something, and then picture yes. that as like an entire documentary.
Yes. Lily Pulitzer documentary.
Yeah. So it's just really visually beautiful and compelling. But what makes it so fascinating is that this place, The Villages, is pitched as Disney World for older people. Some people call it Heaven's Waiting Room. It's oh, like, where
can I move there?
Yeah, right. I thought of you because I'm like, this is where Sarah and I are going to live. Because
yes.
They have everything. It looks utopian. It looks yes. super fun. Everyone's dancing and enjoying music. And they have even like golf cart drill team where they do these fucking like synchronized swimming type things in the
yes, golf Susie. How much longer until we get to be there?
So, you know, the idea is
and the Florida humidity is great for my hair. So I'm ready. Let's go.
You are going to have curly girl retirement.
Yes. Oh, I love it.
But, you know, the idea is that after you've worked your whole life, you go to this place and you can finally enjoy the spoils of having saved enough money to live in Florida. But what I love about it is it really focuses on the idea that your problems don't leave you just because you go to a Disney World for old people, that there's still loneliness and despair and frustration, and relationships are still complicated even when you're old.
Yeah.
And you kind of like really see how the human condition follows you no matter how much money you have.
Oh, so true.
Whatever. And so it was so thought-provoking. I just couldn't get it out of my head. Because like,
interesting. I can't wait to see this.
Like this one old guy, he's 81 and he doesn't actually live at The Villages. He lives in his van and he just goes to The Villages to try to get a rich old lady to marry him.
Oh, oh my God. But like, if you're a rich old lady.
Well, he's kind of.
I mean, how different is this than the fuck boys who, you know, we've all.
He's not a bad looking guy. Like he, for an old man, he's hot. And so you're kind of like,
we know
wow.
how Susie likes older guys. So
80's my limit though. He's 81. So he's out of my range.
Out of your range.
But I don't know. It was just really, because I'm having a midlife crisis. Do you ever think about what you'll be like as an old lady?
Yeah. I think like, I'm probably going to be like my mom. I mean, she's not 80 yet, but like outspoken. And, you know, we talked about this the other day, like the older you get, you just like, don't give a shit about what other people think. Like the older I get, the less and less I care. I'm like, if I'm not your cup of tea, fucking don't drink it. Like get other tea.
Wait, I gotta write that down. Is that a Sarah original? No.
I think. I mean, I'm sure it's on a shirt somewhere. It sounds like somebody should say that.
Because sure that I'm not the is first, a good but. Mantra.
Yeah. That's got to be a thing.
But, okay, so. How old was your mom when she started having kids, though?
30 years old. Or 31. 130.
Get out of here.
57. And I was born in 86. Yeah, she was 31.
Okay. Because I was thinking.
Did you think older or younger?
Younger. Because, you know, back in the day, people had kids younger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like my mom was 21, I think.
Wow. Yeah.
And
but my mom was like, you know, like out being a tour guide in Europe and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
wow. Yeah. She was ahead of her time because that's more typical now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and so was my grandma. Like, my grandma was divorced and, you know, like free spirit. Like, I mean, she tells me stories. Right. My grandma said, my grandma's husband at the time was working down in Panama, and they did not allow, and he was somehow involved in the military, he was an architect and he was doing some kind of construction in the military or for some military project, and wives were not allowed to come. And she was like, fuck it. So she took a train from LA, like Pasadena, all through Arizona, all through Central America, all the way down to Panama by herself, and tells me when she was like 22, 23. Back then, my grandma died on her 99th birthday. So this was like, this is a long time ago. And she said she had so much fun dancing at all of the nightclubs and she had a great time with the locals. And I mean, so she was like a badass bitch before like that was even a thing.
Yeah.
So well, it runs. Cool. It's we got like the independent, free spirited woman like in the blood.
Because I was worried,
so I'm probably gonna be like that
by the time our kids are out of our hair. Like we're gonna be so old though. What are we gonna do?
Yeah,
about
I'm gonna
problem?
Be a million.
Right,
I'm gonna,
that's
like,
what I'm saying.
I'm gonna be. My mom said that to me the other day. She was like, "You know, you're gonna be an old mom," and I was like, "I know, mom." She's like, "You don't want. You need to start having kids because you're gonna be an old mom."
I love
I was
when
like, fuck.
People say stuff that like as if you don't know how old you are.
Right. I was like, yeah, I know, mom. I've done the math and I know when you she's already had all her kids by the time she's my age. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be so tired at like soccer practice or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
we're going to have to figure that out. Maybe they can come with us to the villages. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. So, you know, luckily like Rin's younger than me. He's got energy. He'll handle it, maybe.
Yeah, right. Sarah's a cougar.
You run the dogs. Or the dogs. I don't know. I was thinking about the only thing like about him running around with Bo. And even that I'm tired. I'm like, oh, go you go. So no, my children. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Just watch the film, see what you think. Because it really is thought provoking. I don't know. Probably because of my midlife crisis.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, moving on. Okay, I read this article about aging goths.
Goths?
G-O-T-H, goth.
Oh, goth. Oh, aging goths. Oh my gosh. This is a funny topic.
It is.
Because one of the funniest things to me, which I there's got to be an Instagram account of this, goth people hiking. Because I love to hike, and every now and then you'll see what.
Right.
Sometimes you'll see the whole group of goth people who have gone hiking, or you'll see the one goth family member who is clearly dragged on the trip.
Doesn't want to be
I
there.
love the goth hiker.
Well, because goth
so great.
Goth wardrobe is not great for any kind of physical activity or heat.
Right.
So that
it's
is
a lot of layers. A lot of layers. A lot of black. We do have the option of a parasol, which kind of helps. I have seen
those.
I saw this on the Trail of a Thousand Giants when I was in Sequoia with Ren.
No, a goth with a parasol.
Yeah.
Wow. Bless them. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I never thought about what happens when goths grow up. And because you just picture them in high school.
I bet. Way good skin, not a lot of wrinkles. Good job staying out of the sun.
Not only that, but this article is in the Washington Post. Really, you're going to love it because it was making the point that because goth personalities embrace the full spectrum of emotion, including despair, loneliness, gloom, that by doing that, instead of repressing it, it paradoxically makes them happier and healthier.
Bring back Tuesday Sacrifice. See, okay, Suze, now you know what this is making me think? That's a coping strategy.
What is?
That being goth.
Oh.
Think about the age where most people do that.
Right.
Really, like, dive into that, like, identity.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely a coping strategy. Like, yeah. Maybe I'm dealing with something. And, like, you know how what I've noticed as a therapist is – associate therapist. God, I still have so many hours to do. Anyways, it's another story. What I have noticed is that, oh my God, now I lost my train of thought because I was thinking about how many goddamn hours I have to do. Okay, we're talking about, yes.
Because it's a coping strategy.
I see is that people develop coping strategy. This is the human condition, like what mm-hmm. we do.
Mm-hmm.
We develop coping strategies that we're totally unaware of,
right?
That are like workarounds, like the things that I've had to develop with ADD and that I didn't right. know were things that I've done that were workarounds because my brain works differently in that way.
What would be an example for that?
Like always sitting in the front of the class.
Right.
I always did that, but I didn't know that I didn't know why until I really examined. Well, I have to do that because if I don't, I can't pay attention and I'll, you know, daydream and I'll be like, I have to sit in the front. I have to ask a bunch of questions and be engaged or else my mind will just, I have no idea what's going on. So it's like.
Right. So you eliminate distraction.
Yeah.
But it was unknowing and subconscious.
Totally.
Wow.
Yeah. And it would have just said, oh, Sarah, like she.
She's just a keen bean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like a work. So things like that, or even.
Right.
So yeah. So I think it's like that we do things that are to comfort ourselves and to soothe ourselves, and we don't even know. And then sometimes I think when we look back, like retrospectively, of like, what was I going through during that time? What did I need? And you can kind of put the pieces together. Oh, it makes sense that during a time when I was feeling really. A lot of emotions. I was feeling a ton. I turned to a style and a look that embraced those emotions, just like you said, and expressed the full range.
Mm-hmm.
And it made it feel like it's okay to have those kind of feelings. And it normalized them. And it totally let me process them, even if I didn't know that that's what I was going after that for.
I was super shitty to goth, like, the goth subculture in my mind growing up, because
mm-hmm.
to me it rang as like self-pitying and sort of like they wanted to be different, like counterculture. But I was like, you're not different because you all look the same. Mm-hmm. But now I see it with greater nuance and compassion. And
is this because you like Noel from Great British Baking Show?
I mean, I guarantee you that has had an effect on me because he is
right?
the best.
Uh-huh.
But he really also doesn't have the self-pitying or like morose
mm-hmm.
tone or attitude. He's funny and silly. So it's like the best of both worlds. But
but sometimes goth people are like that too.
Are they?
Yes. At least tell my friends.
Why do they always seem so sad?
It's just the look. It's just like. The resting bitch face look. It's like that.
Well, and in this article, it speaks to this because it says that their ability to find humor and irony and beauty in these supposedly ugly sources, like let's say you see flowers growing outside of a cemetery or mm-hmm. The absurd frailties of the aging body, that it makes them better able to cope with the crap that life inevitably brings
mm-hmm.
and that they also have a great community spirit. So like during COVID, they all meet on Zoom calls. They do like Zoom goth parties or whatever the heck they call it.
I love it.
I do too.
I like community however you find it. And if it's through, you know, there's like all those different styles that I like that.
Do you think I'm wrong about the self-pitying part? Like, is that a fault? Like I misunderstood them?
You know, I feel like that you have to then either even further narrow down the subcultures. So like
right. there's different
emo
kinds.
And goth, because I almost feel like emo is more of that, like the Smiths and
right,
that
like
whiny
diary.
Guy.
Yeah.
Like goth, I feel like is more playful in itself just because it's more like there's more of a costume element to it or more of a, like a fantasy element. I don't know. I could be, I mean, that's just like, kind what of you're my saying. Take on it as Tuesday Sacrifice, but you know, how can you be a parasol? You're in a parasol. How can you be sad?
It's adorable. I think they would argue too that anyone that's quote unquote happy all the time is faking it. So they're being honest. If they're sad, they don't fake it.
Well, and you know what? This is something that I work on with clients too. And is people will say, well, I want to be happy. I'm like, okay, well, what does that look like? What is it like if you have somebody who's happy all the time? Is that realistic? Is that maybe setting yourself up?
Do you think you can
be happy all the time?
Well, happy, but like joyful.
You can. We're all going to experience a full range of emotion. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the thing we talk about with mindfulness practice and the experience of pain and suffering and how pain is a part of the human existence, but our resistance of that pain is what creates the suffering. Mm-hmm. So if we just say, yep, this is a pain moment. Yep. Death is part of life. Yep. You know, like roses die, whatever it is, like mm-hmm. if we can just minimize the resistance to that pain, then mm-hmm. we decrease our suffering, and in decreasing our suffering, we increase our joy.
Yeah.
But you can't, it's yin and yang. You can't have the joy without, and the perfect example of that is Inside Out, that does such a good job of highlighting the importance of sadness in our happy moments and mm-hmm. how even the moments of sadness usually lead to moments of happiness and joy. Mm-hmm. We need that balance and that. Oh, my heart. Yeah. Yay, goths.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Okay, any hoodles. Do you want to hear, how about the history of peanut butter?
Oh, peanut butter jelly time, peanut butter jelly time.
It's like the Celine clip.
It's so good. I go back to that Celine clip every now and then just for fun and then I posted about it. It's in my highlights reel. It's saved under like the brain candy or whatever because it was so funny that you introduced me to that. And I think in that meme I say, or in that post, I'm like, it's funny because she either A, has a hilarious, like she's referencing the Family Guy, or she's referencing an old school meme. Either way, I like, or she has no idea, which is even funnier. All of those options I love. My mom, the best.
Recently, my mom said to me, hey, you know how you're really good at like contacting celebrities and getting them to like acknowledge you? I'm like, well, yes, I am. And she said, do you think you could do that for me? I'm like, sure. Who do you want me to contact? And she said, Celine.
I'm like, I can't believe it. She, before Trump.
Right? And I'm like, you know what? I got to say, there is a limit to my ability and it's about that. Level. Celine,
come on. I love it. You should just like go straight to the top. Like,
I'm like, what do you want to say to her?
Music royalty. What does she want to say?
She's like, I just think she's so nice and she's just so inspiring and her music is so beautiful. I'm like, I'm sure she knows all that already.
You should tell her that she didn't vote for Trump. Ooh. I mean, I know she's Canadian, but
she probably would be okay with it because, like, she loves me.
Well, yeah. Okay.
She's able to look past it.
So you, Celine, same.
All right. I think we would all agree. We're like two peas in a pot.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, peanut butter. Okay. This was on SmithsonianMagazine.com. And it was saying, first of all, peanut butter began with the Incas, but like fast forward to like modern world. It was the Kellogg, you know, the guy that made the cereal.
Yeah.
Who got the
And
patent.
Wasn't that an accident anyway?
I don't think it was an accident, but it was like...
Oh, no, that was the penicillin or something from cereal. Oh, okay, never mind. yeah.
It's different guy.
Different. That was like an act. I know there's somewhere cereal and this is involved, and I don't know. I can't remember. But
well, Kellogg maybe got the patent for like basically whizzing up peanuts and adding some salt and making a spread so that he could feed it to the patients at a sanitarium that he was running.
Whoa.
I know. It's bonkers.
And the idea of...
I don't even... And you know how I feel that peanut butter can make you choke? I think that's the last thing they should be eating.
This makes me think that maybe the dental hygiene of people in there
why?
Was the issue. Well, because why would you need to grind something up into a paste? You're really, I'm like looking for why they would need to do this. They're looking for a protein dense, like our nutrient dense thing to feed them.
Yeah, like baby food.
Right? Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
But don't they know about the choking hazard?
Well, peanut butter being a new invention, probably not a lot of time to get some evidence on the case.
I should record my mom talking about why peanut butter is a choking hazard.
Because yeah, I mean, she's not wrong. I get it.
You
it seems
do?
Like it. It gets sticky in your throat.
Yes.
But
why
you're
did
not
I? Why
choke
did you
on
judge
it?
Me when I told you that? My
oh,
fear...
no judgment. No, Suze, you're please. I get nervous when I eat apples and I'm all alone in the house.
Stop it.
I don't know why apples to me. You know what it is? It's because every movie, they're always. It's always like. In the cartoons and stuff, somebody's eating an apple and then they got to do the Heimlich and it's a piece that flies out. It's always like an apple in cartoons.
Yeah, why?
So I think,
are they scary?
I think it's kind of like what like quicksand did for me. Like I think, oh my God, it's so dangerous. But it's not. And like I, in my mind, I'm like, ah, I better not eat apples. I'll definitely choke because that's what people seem to choke on in every single cartoon. But I do get nervous sometimes. One time I like inhaled a piece of the skin and it like went down the wrong tube. And I had that moment where I did like the, you know,
yes,
like that,
that
gasp.
Scares
and
me.
I had... terrifying. And I was by myself. And that was when I was like, oh shit, I gotta like be careful. Like, what if you choke when you're by yourself? I know you fall in the back of the chair and all that, but I don't know. I can just hear people because this is
what know,
my friends
what
will
I
tell
thought.
Me. They tell me like they listen to the show and then they like talk at me to it because like my friends will be like, well, I feel like I'm just like talking to you. So I'll be like, no, Sarah, you actually just like lean on the chair. So I have to talk to my friends and
right.
all listeners who now are my friends. About what I know you're all thinking.
Yeah,
so.
But I think you're right. Like, I don't think that would really work.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd have to be like a really big piece. And also, I don't have those kind of chairs. I have like a high back chair that I would have to like get my stepladder and then jump off of. Like it was like WWE. And I'm like jumping onto the freaking like ropes.
Please do this and post a video.
Oh my God. That would be so funny. I'll just do like what it would look like for me to do myself the Heimlich.
Wait, I'm going to write this
the
down.
Chairs.
Oh God. That's God. So great. Okay, wait. Focus. Okay. So then... So that it said that he had elite clientele like Amelia Earhart and Henry Ford. So, mm-hmm. But why were they at the sanitarium? Question mark. I don't know.
Exhaustion? Like a...
Oh, yeah. Wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
But that because these are high-profile people, that made peanut butter a delicacy. It was like a fancy food at the time.
Well, there goes my my need no teeth theory.
Stop. I cannot it's take
like, it. I mean, we don't have Amelia Earhart's dental record, so.
Yeah, maybe we just learned something about her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. Somebody ridiculous. Photoshop Amelia Earhart with no teeth, please.
Yeah, have you seen those things like Tom Cruise and no teeth? Oh, those no. pictures are funny. They crack me up. Like, you just, like, it's the same with, like, people without eyebrows. Like, when they just
right,
Photoshop
just
eyebrows
wrong.
Out. Like, things, it's weird.
Okay,
oh, that's funny.
Then...
Yes, I'm never going to let you finish a story. It's going to take two episodes to get through the history of peanut butter. Who knows? Like, four sentences you have. Can't even get
okay,
through.
So then it became more popularized because they were meat rationing during World War I. Mm. So that made sense.
Yeah.
And then some dude figured out that you could partially rehydrogenated whatever. You know how, I don't know how you'd say that.
Yeah, rehydrogenate.
Yeah. So then it made it more shelf stable. And then this was crazy. So peanut butter became popular for soldiers, which makes sense. It's like a protein dense, you know, convenient food. But if apparently when people from America are traveling abroad and they can't find peanut butter, they go to military bases because they know they can find it there for sure.
Oh.
That's a good tip.
Interesting.
If you're ever craving
it. I was under the impression that somehow George Washington Carver wasn't involved in this.
Yeah, he was. He made all these different sort of like inventions and innovations with peanut butter. Oh. And he was really, like most excellent black people, ahead of his time and kind of like nobody really listened. But it turned out he was right because he was using peanuts for all sorts of things with farming. I don't really understand it because he's way smarter than me. But something about like rotating crops. And,
oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, the kind of crop it is. And yeah.
He was just like a badass who was like too smart for his own good, especially because no one was probably listening because he was black.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, he is a peanut butter savant. And I was shocked that in 2020, peanut butter finally outsold jam in the UK. And I couldn't believe it because like when I was, you know, I'm married to a British man and he talks a lot about how peanut butter is this stereotypical American food. And now it's starting to really get popular in other countries as well that had typically seen it more like Vegemite or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. But now, are you peanut butter or almond butter?
Oh, I mean, I guess I go with the classic, but I'll eat either one.
Peanut butter.
What about
crunchy
you?
Crunchy or smooth?
Smooth.
Okay.
Creamy. What do you like?
Creamy.
You're like crunchy almond.
Yeah. Sometimes. Depends on what I'm going for.
Yeah.
Like on a banana, I like crunchy. I like
on
little
a
texture.
Banana?
Oh my gosh,
that
so good.
That seems like a double choking hazard.
Probably.
I normally find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting. But Skims has changed that. You know I love Skims underwear, so I finally tried their bras, and Skims has delivered again. Skims bras are worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give, but what I wasn't expecting was how comfortable they are too. I've tried so many bras in the past, and the main issue that I have is that they weren't supportive enough, to the point where they felt slouchy. I love my Skims wireless form bra because it's so comfortable and supportive. The older I get, the more I care about actually being comfortable in what I wear every day. And with my wireless form bra, I no longer have to sacrifice my comfort for the support I need. Shop Skims bras at skims.com, now available in 62 sizes, 30A to 46H. Plus, get free shipping on all orders over $75. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.
All right, so we learned about peanut butter. Okay, so then I read this article about the idea of dream jobs, which, you know, is still a thing people sort of talk about, like, oh, I want to get my dream job, or I finally got my dream job, and how, like, they're never really as good as you hope.
Right.
And it was, I think it's such a good thing, because remember how I told you about in that book, Can't Even, by Anne Helen Peterson, how mm-hmm. the idea of like, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life is mm-hmm. a lie that was told to everybody. And then it made us sort of chronically available for work and able to be exploited. And this article sort of falls into that same philosophy, which is that, like, remember when there was this contest, I don't know if you read about it, where a lighthouse was looking for lighthouse keepers that could live there, run the lighthouse, and they would be paid $130,000 a year. It was like it went viral. It was sort of like, mm-hmm. wow, wouldn't that be cool to live in a lighthouse and be paid for it? Mm-hmm. And they had interviewed the people that got the job and how they work like 80 to 90 hours a week. And they have to like do all this crap that, you know, isn't very glamorous or soothing. And they sort of use that as an example of how we're all seeking something that just doesn't exist.
Well, you know, I think sometimes we don't know about, there's the parts of the job that are visible. I think about it as like the invisible labor thing, you know, like I love what I do as a therapist. Love it. There is no other job for me. There are parts of it that are like, oh my gosh, I got to like do all these notes and I got to do all these, like a lot of the, back of the house stuff mm-hmm. and like, you know, work with insurance companies and follow up with this. And it's just like, when I was fantasizing about being a therapist when I was, you know, going to therapy, and I'm like, ooh, I could do this. I had no idea what the, that you'd spend 1 hour with the client and then 3 hours doing the other stuff. And it's like part of it. And so, you know, you love it and you do it all, but I can definitely see if you had unrealistic expectations of what that job really entailed. Like, I think about people who even say, ooh, I want to host a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
You ready to work? Because there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. And, you know. Right.
Like, how we imagine a job will be is very different than how it actually is.
Yeah.
And they used an example of, like, park rangers. And how, you know, it's really nice to be able to be out in nature all day. But they say you kind of get paid in sunrises and sunsets because you make like $0 and 0 cents. Yep. And a lot of them retire from that profession at age 26 when they can't be on their family's health insurance anymore.
Oh, my gosh.
You know,
I did see a lot of very young park rangers and things like that.
Which is cool. Know. Like when you're young, you knock yourself out, but it's not, you can't keep it because it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
And how, the one park ranger they spoke to said, it's not the same to go on a hike in a uniform as it is when you go on your day off. It's just different.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of that, that it changes things.
And I feel like the passion and purpose, like mantra is really what white collar upper class people do. Like, oh, it's my passion.
Yeah.
It's just not afforded to lower income people or often people of color.
Yeah.
Like we're not
worried
about
I go down to, oh my gosh, this has been something I've been, I think maybe I talked about this last time or maybe we talked about this. I don't know, but Maslow's hierarchy of needs is what that makes me think of and how, on that, in that hierarchy, the things at the bottom, so it's like a food pyramid, you know, like a pyramid. Yeah. And at the bottom, the thing, the most basic that we all need first, like we can't get the things on the next levels or the higher up levels without first handling the things on the levels below. Mm-hmm. So basic needs, physiological needs, food, water, warmth, rest, number one. Next, safety needs. So security and safety. That means security and safety financially, security and safety. Are your children healthy? Like, do we have, you know, babysitters? Do we have daycare? Do we have all that? Then you have the psychological needs. Like up above that is belongingness and love needs. So intimate relationships and friendships. And then above that, esteem needs. So prestige and feelings of accomplishment. And then the very top, self-fulfillment needs, so self-actualization and achieving one's full potential, including creative ideas. So when you have, when you come from a, just a, when you're white, when you have privilege, when you come from a wealthy family, when you, you know, have resources, the first two, sometimes even three of those are already taken care of. So you can work on esteem needs and self-actualization. When you have to work on physiological needs and safety needs, self-actualization is not going to be a priority.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, it would be wonderful if you could get it all from one place, but that you're kind of being sold a bill of goods. And like one of the things they say to look for is anytime a company uses the sort of like family language, like we're all family. Mm-hmm. And people do this on the challenge too. We're all one big dysfunctional family. No, we're not. We're not.
Right.
We're not in a family because if I needed you, literally no one would be there.
Right. And when I have the
right.
Right.
Oh, it's a game,
which is
Sarah.
Fine,
it's a game.
But,
So anytime like, and it's very popular in like the tech millennial sort of upstart companies where it's like, we want it to be a family atmosphere, which means like you have to be there all the time, but no one's going to be there for you. That's not a family. That's exploitation. So
yes,
buyer beware about that too.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is of how to...
I think we need to change our expectations.
Well, absolutely. And then, change our expectations and I think you are so right when you've talked about how, you know, millennials are always on with this whole gig kind of
economy.
What economy? Mm-hmm. Thank you. That we're always on call and the job is never up. So we don't have these boundaries for our free time and our
play.
Enjoyment. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so I think that is more important maybe than love what you do. Maybe you don't love what you do, but have good boundaries so that you have times to do something you love, even if it's just, you know, cuddling with your kids at night and reading a bedtime story or whatever it is. And quality, not quantity.
So, right.
So, because I know for some people who are working two jobs and like it's hard to carve out that time.
Right. And
or set those
a lot
boundaries.
Of times you're set up to fail.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the people who, you know, want boundaries aren't in a position to ask for them or demand them.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a shitty situation, but hopefully we'll get some changes made in the way that the work home life. I know it's bad now because everyone's working from home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Did you see that tweet that said, when COVID is over is starting to sound the same as when I win the lottery?
Yep. I sure did see that. And I was like, damn, that I felt that.
Yeah. And I don't know what to make of that. Well, let's not go down that road. It's too depressing.
Right. Yeah. We just have to, like you said, I think it all comes down to changing expectations and resetting our goals and looking at more things that bring us, it's like meaningful interactions and some meaning making out there in the world.
Yeah. Amen.
Amen.
Speaking of the pandemic, I read this article about, I think it was in the New York Times, and it was how baby names have been skewed as a result of, you know, as always, whatever's going on in the world has an impact on what we name our children. And they were saying that they're trying to be more positive. So they are choosing these names with meanings that are like inspirational.
Mm.
I'll give you some examples. Okay. So first of all, it said there were about 4 million more page views on the baby name site during the 9-month period after the start of the pandemic in March.
I have literally been one of those views. Ren and I had a conversation about baby names the other night. And about changes in them and how, it's so interesting that you bring this up. We were just talking about this. Yeah.
Well, you're one of the 4 million then.
Yep.
And they were saying that there people, we don't know the data yet on what they're actually naming the children, but we know what they're searching for. So Zora, for example, it means dawn and it suggests new beginnings is up 40%. Alma, which is soul in Spanish, is up 37%. Lucius, which connotes light, is up 24%. Other risers include Vivienne, which means alive or lively.
Oh, my goodness.
Aurora, which is the goddess of the sunrise. Felix, which is happy. Frida is peaceful. Zuri is good. And then place names like Cairo and Milan are also on the rise, I guess, because people want to travel.
Miss vacation. Huh.
And like names that represent optimism and strength, like gods and goddesses, Adonis, things like that.
I like this.
Biblical names. And then certain ones are in the decline that sound like like obviously Corona, but Lachlan sounds too much like lockdown.
Oh.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so interesting.
I
love the study of baby names because
it's like a mirror. It tells
and
you like what's going on.
I believe you said you were talking about an article on this many, many episodes ago, and you said it was one of the only things that you can like own or have ownership of, but you don't buy. That
Ooh.
There's no, it doesn't cost anything, but it's yours. And there's also, there were patterns in baby names and different socioeconomic groups and their naming of them. So like we would see more popular names in like upper class, like these hoity-toity groups names. And then those would become the more
like
common
Tiffany
name
was the
place
example,
names.
I remember.
Yeah, I remember. And it was just that I was telling Ren this, and that was just so fascinating to me that we can look at that because, yeah, you can give your kid any name. You don't have to like buy. It's not, there's no value, like no yeah. money to it, but right. it's something that you own and have and is yours. And it's just interesting.
And like they were saying that people are, obviously there's always been a history of people naming their kid after maybe a grandparent who's passed away or something mm-hmm, like that. Mm-hmm. But now people are tending to name them after living relatives because they miss them so much right now.
Oh.
Isn't that sad?
Well, my baby names are both one that is that inspiring and hope-filled one mm-hmm. and one that is a relative name. So,
oh, so you know. Kind of fit into it.
Absolutely.
So you weren't one of those people that had, like, when you were 10 years old, you knew you were going to name your daughter whatever.
The thing I wanted to name my kid at 10 years old is, I remember, it was like, I met this cool girl yeah. when I was at the Phoenician Resort in Palm Springs. I wow. can remember exactly where it was. And I was like, man, she is so cool. And her name was Madison. I wouldn't name my kid. That would not be my choice of name now, you know, because it was, like, just not my choice.
Yeah.
And now I want to name my child after my grandma.
You made me think of something though, because the name that I wanted to name my kid when I was little was because I met a cool girl yeah. at the beach. And I'm wondering if it's because we're on vacation, like that it seemed even cooler and more exotic or something.
Yeah. And I can very much remember this being, for me, this being a vacation where I became very aware of my body and how I was chubbier, that like, I just became very aware. I remember, oh my gosh, I can like remember a bathing suit I was in and posing for a picture. And I'm like hunched over, like trying to cover up my stomach. I had nothing to worry about. I was a child and nobody, and there's no reason to worry, but I can remember thinking, wow, she's in a bikini, and maybe it was like a vulnerability thing too, like heightened vulnerability in that moment. And then somebody who looked confident and having so much fun. And I was like, oh, I want to be like that.
Wow.
And, you know, who knows where Madison is these now, but
she's probably still super cool.
Probably.
I'm going to put up a thing on our Instagram and hear what other people wanted to name their kid like when they were little.
Yeah. Was it some girl that you thought was cool?
Right. Okay, let's wind it down, Sarah.
Yeah. Good episode, Suze. You taught me about peanut
good
butter.
Good episode, Suze. High fives.
Yeah. High fives all around.
We're rooting for Elizabeth Smart to keep on keeping on.
Yep. We talked about some goths and how maybe there's more to
that was that fun. Style. I like that conversation.
Totally fun. Me too. That's why I told you. A+, 5 stars. In fact, listeners, if go give us a 5-star
my
review.
My two quotes of Sarah's from this episode that I'm taking with me were, if I'm not your cup of tea, then don't drink it, and bring back Tuesday's sacrifice. That was hilarious.
Oh gosh. I'm sure somebody said that quote about cup of tea. My mom emailed me the other day and she was like, all it said was t-shirt design. And then underneath it was in the message, if common sense were so common, why doesn't everybody have it? And I was like, I've heard that. You are correct 100%. That is on a couple coffee mugs. Like, you're so right, mom. But and she's like, yeah, make that. I'm like, yes, I totally agree. And so I'm sure it's the same with the cup of tea one.
We got the amazing visual of Sarah choking to death in a WWE ring, which was extra special.
Oh.
And dream jobs just kind of don't exist. So let go of that idea.
Yeah. Just like, we're all trying to make some meaning in this difficult time.
This crazy world.
Yeah.
Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review, everybody.
All right.
See you next time.
Bye.